very complicated bird case, as you say, which was really the smuggling of parakeets. Actually, they originated in Europe, probably in Belgium, were transported to Mexico, and then were either flown over the border or brought in by wetbacks, you know, on the backs of the Mexican poor. And the immigration and agricultural people, I guess it was, of course, were hard-pressed to find these people. But the point was, it was a very lucrative business. Macy's was selling a lot of them every day. It was a craze at the time, so it was very lucrative. And there were 12 defendants. And I remember that they were represented by various lawyers, and we had all kinds of complications, including the judge was threatened, I was threatened as his law clerk. This was all anonymously, of course. And I remember our crier, who was a young law graduate, I'm trying to think of his name, he had replaced Turtelot by that time. And so he was helping a little bit with the research, but he was mostly involved in helping as a crier in the courtroom, handling papers between judge and lawyer and that kind of thing. And he somehow ended up hobnobbing, if I can use a little broader term, with one of the jurors, who was a gorgeous, blonde, buxom woman. And somebody moved for a mistrial, I think, and it was close, but we established that it hadn't influenced the jury or whatever, and the trial continued. And I also remember that there was one lawyer who represented a goodly number of the defendants. And after the conviction of his clients, the government subsequently indicted and convicted him of a co-conspiracy. And I'll never forget that the he was disbarred, but I think not too long later, he was permitted to re-enter practice, which really surprised the hell out of me. I think his name was Butler, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I was just trying, I think I have that name here somewhere, but what was, can you tell me about the threat that was made against yourself?
No, I can't, because it was all secondhand. I don't know to whom it came. Probably came to the judge, and you know, the FBI took over right away, and we you know, weren't going to let it interfere with what we had to do. I think they probably stationed some FBI people around for a while to make sure that it wasn't anything really real. They questioned the defendants if, you know, they knew anything about it. Mm-hmm. And of course, they denied anything. And I don't think anything was ever proven, but they were convicted, mm-hmm. and I believe went to prison. Mm-hmm. And that was at the time when, you know, the parrot on Barnaby Conrad's shoulder was everywhere. He had a restaurant in San Francisco that was famous for a parrot in the lobby there when you first came in, and that kind of thing. So this was all part of the culture, the fad at the time.
Mm-hmm. But in terms of this threat that was made to you, how was it delivered, or how did?
I never saw it.
You never saw it?
I was just told about it.
I see.
And told to be careful, you know, watch my back, and be sensible about my wife and child, and keep in touch. Let the court know where we were going. You know, mm-hmm. that was all. Mm-hmm. It really wasn't. I think I was just included. I'm sure their real target would have been the judge, and he wasn't going to let it faze him. So. Nor was I.
Uh-huh. And was your family down in San Diego with you then at that time? Or?
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We lived in a little house on Coronado.
Uh-huh. And I guess Gus dispensed with that case in 16 days, was it? Or?
He what?
Gus tried that case in 16 days, was it, or something like that?
Something like that. I know everyone felt that he really let no grass grow under his feet, and he pushed the lawyers along and wouldn't take any delays or excuses. And there were times when we would sit, as I recall, well after the usual hours.
There was a note I've got here that there was a Mr. Hefner involved in this case who was cited for contempt. Lee Hefner, do you remember?
Hefner?
Do you remember anything about that?
The name rings a bell. He was one of the defendants?
I believe so, yes.
Probably, but I don't really recall exactly for what. Mm-hmm. I know we had a lot of difficulty. The defendants were obstreperous, the lawyers were obstreperous, and Gus had to sit pretty hard on them, and did. Mm-hmm. Kept the trial moving, kept you know, their so-called oratory in check. They were trying every trick in the book.
Mm-hmm. I understand there were rumors even of some murders down in Mexico of people that might have been witnesses.
Yes, there were two murders in Mexico, I think, of witnesses. And of course, that was just enhanced the seriousness of the whole thing, because mm-hmm. It didn't just go to the case, it went to the heart of our system. And we all realized that, and I'm sure it aroused Gus's ire and prosecutor's office certainly didn't like that. The FBI, but it was, as I say, there was a lot of money in it, because these birds were being sold right and left, mm-hmm. and they were coming over by air, you know, small airplanes from small airports and by wetbacks all the time.
Uh-huh.
And the danger, of course, was psittacosis.
Uh-huh. so-called parrot fever.
Yeah.
I guess today it's drugs, and back then it was birds crossing the border.
Sure, birds or peanuts.
Yeah. Now you mentioned that Gus put in long hours on that case. I guess maybe he worked like that anyway, but he suffered a heart attack, I think, shortly after the San Diego case. Do you recall the heart attack, and do you think it might have been related to his hard work down there in San Diego?
I don't recall any heart attack. He had a heart attack quite a bit later, as I recall. But I don't recall any heart attack then or shortly thereafter. We came back to New York after leaving San Diego, and at the end of the case, we were doing some other cases. I know that Libby, his wife, went to a doctor. My wife had been told that she was pregnant with our second child, and she had been told that she would lose that child because a youngest daughter had the measles, something like this. And we went to a, that was a Navy doctor. Then we went to another doctor who said, "That's silly, don't worry. All you need is some gammaglobulin, which was in short supply because of it's being used, you know, for polio at the time." And she said, "Don't worry, I'll get it, no problem." And we got it and everything was fine. But Libby, kind of in gratitude to that doctor, went to her just for a checkup, and the doctor said she had cancer. So this threw her into a tizzy, and we packed her up and sent her back to Portland. As it turned out, her doctor, their good friend, the Goodmans, said, "There's nothing to it, she's fine." So, but that's the only medical incident that I can recall.
Now you said that you all came to New York after San Diego?
No, just my family.
Just your family?
Yes.
Okay.
We didn't want to go back to Portland. And I didn't like the practice of law in Portland at that time. It was all real estate or criminal.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't broad as it's become. I sometimes wish I had stayed there. But we came back to New York.
Mm-hmm. And that was right after San Diego then?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have a note here that Judge Lindbergh from Seattle came down and took over for Gus when he had this heart attack. Now, maybe I'm a little confused about the timing of it, but this is from his oral history.
Whose oral history?
From Gus's oral history.
I see.
And he mentioned the San Diego case in connection with that heart attack. So
the Bird case?
Yeah, the Bird case. But
gee, I'll ask my wife, but I remember packing Gus's wife up and sending her back to Portland with Helen Rand, and Gus following after that. Now, maybe Lindbergh came down because Gus went back, you know, to be with his wife. But I don't recall it was a question of Gus's health or heart.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you were with him then for how long?
Just a year.
Just the 1 year.
Little, maybe a month or two over a year.
Uh-huh. Okay. And you decided that you didn't want to stick around in Portland.
Yes, it bothered my wife, so we had just didn't even consider going back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Would you have been able to go back as Gus's law clerk for another year if you'd wanted to?
I think I could have, but Gus was wonderful. He would have, I know I had an offer from his former law firm. I forget the partner's name. A very good lawyer who specialized in electric district law. Anyway,
public
utilities, but. The districts that were set up to bring water and power to sparsely populated areas.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I could have done that. I think Gus wanted to use me to break the barrier in one or two of the larger law firms. Ozzie Georges had just gone with the King Wood Anderson firm, I forget what it's called now, and the other big firm had not taken any Jewish lawyers. Another good friend of Gus wanted me to go with him, and mm-hmm. so I think I could have
there were lots
made a living there.
Yeah. I wonder if you can tell me about some of the other people you met at the district court at that time. Maybe Judge Fee, for instance. Did you have much interaction with Judge Fee at that time?
Very, very little. He was quite a haughty, austere fellow as far as everybody else was concerned. I think he was probably a good person to work for. I know Vern Newcomb was ended up admiring him. And certainly he was respected as a judge and lawyer. Albeit a very conservative man. And Ozzie Georges was a classmate of mine, and we saw them quite a bit. And the fellow who's now a special partner in Vern Newcomb's firm, he was the district attorney, I think, at the time. Mm-hmm. What is his name? He's semi-retired now. Another fellow from our law school class, Butler, was practicing there. Mm-hmm. He became a judge. We saw them occasionally. But we worked pretty hard, worked half-day Saturdays, And so we were quite busy.
Mm-hmm. And what Vern Newcomb, he was had he moved on from Fee's as
yes, physician? He just stayed a year, mm-hmm. and so he was then practicing, and he introduced me to a lot of the lawyers and the younger lawyers, and we'd play basketball at lunchtime, or go running, or just have lunch, or. Mm-hmm.
And what about, let's see, I think maybe Judge McCullough, was he at the district court at that time?
Yes, I guess he was the third judge, but he was kind of ill. Mm-hmm. So he didn't, as I recall, really carry a full load.
Mm-hmm. And Judge
And
East?
Subsequently retired.
Uh-huh. While you were still there, or...?
Just about. It's 45 years is pretty fuzzy.
Uh-huh. And Judge East, was he there at that time, too?
I just forget. I don't know if East took McCullough's place. I know there were three. And then maybe they added a fourth, or he took McCullough's place. I just forget. Mm-hmm. I never really knew Judge East, mm-hmm. or really McCullough for that matter.
Okay. Did Gus introduce you to people around Portland?
Oh, yes. Gus was just wonderful about introducing me to anybody and everybody. Mo Tonkin was a good friend of his and a lawyer, a respected lawyer with a good practice. And whenever Gus, he'd have us over for supper, or we'd go have lunch with somebody, or breakfast, or coffee, or whatever. He went way out of his way to introduce me around and make life both interesting and heartwarming.
Mm-hmm. Did he introduce you mostly to people in legal circles, or?
No, he had a lot of relatives, so we met all of them. Mm-hmm. I remember some were in the mattress business, and his good friend, his doctor, Goodman, just everybody. Mm-hmm. He couldn't have been nicer.
Mm-hmm. And
and when we were down in San Diego, we used to go to the beach with them. Gus was a burly guy covered with hair, so that and he knew people down there, and we'd on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday would one way or another get together with somebody.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever meet Judge Denman, who was the head of the Ninth Circuit, I think, at that time?
Judge who?
Denman.
No.
No.
Judge was, Gus was just getting started then. Don't forget, when I went there, he had only been on the bench a year, had to do all his own clerking, so he had little spare time. Mm-hmm. And then I came, and he was helping me get acclimated and learning himself. And it was really thereafter that he became comfortable and blossomed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did he introduce you to people in Jewish society in Portland at that time, too?
Sure, but not per se.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of, you know, Gus's family were all Jewish, and a lot of his friends, some of the lawyers, but also he was very friendly with, I remember one particular banker at the U.S. National Bank. he introduced me to. And it's hard to recall, because after I went into Wall Street, I would travel out there, and he'd introduce me to everybody he could that would be helpful, including bankers and lawyers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you meet any of the political figures in Oregon at that time when you were clerking for the judge?
Not that I recall. I mean, I didn't. I don't recall meeting the senators or, you know, the governor or anything. I do recall once we had the Supreme Court was sitting out there. They were sitting on the Ninth Circuit. A few members of the Supreme Court, and Gus had him over to dinner. The only way I could really be at the dinner, as a young squirt. He had some of the prominent people in Portland to dinner, including Jebby Davidson. I was the bartender, so I was able to meet everybody. And at the time, I don't know if you recall or have picked it up, Jebby Davidson's then wife, was about to be married to Justice Douglas. And there was some ill feeling, I think, between the two. And I'll recall they're both meeting at my bar, and my fixing them, both of them, a pretty stiff drink. And they took the drink and went each their own way. And about an hour later, it turned out that the Chief Justice, Stimson, had just died. He dropped dead. Uh-huh. So the president was sending a plane for these justices to get back for the funeral. So that cut short the party. Cut short. I think it lasted till 10:30 anyway. But I'm sure I met, you know, some of the leading people in Portland. I just don't recall.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, we're almost at the end of this tape here. I'll turn it off for one.